Dana DeVlantis here on WGN 134. That surprised me. We're back. And Jim Toronto is in the studio. We're going to talk a little music this half hour here on WGN. Elton Jim Toronto. However, it wasn't an Elton John concert, which you're known for going to, that you were at last night. You were in New York, right, Jim?
Well, I have to set the record straight.
All right, let's hear it. Go ahead. Let's go.
You know, there's no question. I am an Elton John fan, and I have this nickname, and it's very well suited. And I embrace
You've been to how many concerts? Just say that.
Well, I've been stuck at 197 since November of 2019.
Poor thing. Only 197 Elton John concert.
I was all set for 200 at Madison Square Garden. Now that's all up in smoke.
Yeah.
But anyway, but I should say, just for general knowledge, I've been writing about music in general.
I know.
Since I was like 20 years old.
Aren't you even writing for Ravinia now?
I see him. In fact, if you go to Ravinia in the next month or so before they, I've had three stories in their Venue magazine. The new one will be about Max Weinberg from the E Street Band.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, I interviewed him. And
he's incredible. I had a chance to meet him at City Winery.
Yes, I was there.
Backstage, we went over and talked to him a little bit.
Very
he's
cool.
Just a cool guy.
I jumped on stage and sang Glory Days.
Oh! Well, how many times have you been on stage with Elton John? Because he knows you.
Well, I've never been on stage. But no? I should mention that, not that I know this or it was a big deal, but October 19th, 2018, he did dedicate a song to me in Madison Square.
Oh my gosh! Pinch me.
I was standing there.
Goosebumps. That's amazing.
And he says, I've been talking about you fans tonight, and there's this one guy from Chicago, and I'm like, And he said I've never dedicated a song to him, but I'm going to do it tonight, and so this is for you, Jim Toronto. And I just,
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable.
And you're the super fan of all super fans.
And thankfully, one of his people in his video group, they sent me, I have the video from the video screen of him doing that.
Oh,
so only four or five times a day do I play that.
And it's only one of 1 million memorabilia items you have. Has your wife kicked you out of the house yet? I mean, of all the stuff you've collected?
She's tried, but she can't find the door. Because there's a big giant mannequin with a jacket
a
right
Elton
in front
John.
Of it. Yeah.
Do you have the grand piano or
no.
any of those?
No, I don't have
it.
I do have a jacket. I have one of his jackets that he wore in 1976, which was the first time I saw him. I was 12 years old, and my mom took me to the old Chicago Stadium.
Nice.
And I do have a pair of his glasses from that era, too. So those were my two favorite. But I've got a lot of different crazy things that... I've got a couple of pinball machines.
Pinball machines?
Yeah.
Oh, Elton John pinball
machines. Elton John
machines.
Pinball machines, yeah, from 1976.
Right.
He was a pinball wizard in Tommy. So.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together.
Yeah.
All right, well, we want to talk about what you were doing. Was it last night?
No, Wednesday.
Wednesday night
I
in
came
New
home
York.
Last night, yeah.
Came home last night.
Yeah.
What was it?
Well, so like I said, let's let the record straight. I love Elton John, but I am a huge, huge music fan. In fact, thanks to the pandemic, with a lot of time on my hands, I went back and counted all of my concert stubs that I've ever gone to, at least I kept.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the number. I think there's a few missing, but at the very least, I'm at 540.
Oh, gee.
Now, that's including Elton and everyone. So my point is, I like music. And I've seen Springsteen, counting the other night, 48 times. So,
oh my gosh.
And
this is all over the world too. You're very dedicated.
Well, I haven't seen Bruce across the pond, but coast to coast. I've seen him in California, and I've been to the pilgrimage
and
in
Elton
New Jersey.
You've seen everywhere.
Yeah, I've gone to London. I actually saw him in Prague, which was actually pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But so anyway, what was interesting about this? He was one of the first when the edict came that we can take our masks off and hug everybody back in May. Which I thought was a little premature.
In retrospect.
Yeah, exactly.
In hindsight.
Yeah. But, Broadway and New York was like, we're back, right? Because, that has been devastating for the New York tourism, which is built upon the shows and Times Square and the restaurants and everything else. So they lured Springsteen back to do his one-man show, which he did record-breaking back in 2017 and 2018, to sort of be the official bringing back of Broadway show, which started in mid-June. So I was a little skeptical. I mean, the shows that I saw in 2017 and 2018, I saw it twice, were if you're a Springsteen fan, those were must-see shows because small venue at that time, less than 1,000 people, just him and his guitar and a piano, at Center Stage for 2.5 hours. So you can't get much more intimate unless you get invited for dinner. And that's not...
Not everyone gets that opportunity.
Yeah, no, there's only a few. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those shows were based on his Born to Run autobiography, which had come out a year before that. And so he, it was a story, kind of a storytelling show in which he told the stories of his life and wove the songs that went with those stories that you would know. And it was very poignant, very dramatic, very funny. For me, sometimes, actually, the music got in the way. He's mm-hmm. such a good storyteller that I was like, don't play the song. Tell me more of these stories. But, you know, so, for, like I said, 2 hours and 20 minutes, you can't beat it. It had it every pathos, drama, laughter, irony. It was all there. You know, pain, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
What I was interested in seeing this was that now it's 3 years later.
Right.
A lot of life has happened in those 3 years for us collectively, mm-hmm. as well as him personally. He's now 70. In fact, he's going to be 72 next month.
How about that?
Yeah. And so, in fact, one of the great
does
lines,
he look good?
Yes, he does. He's very thin. You know, he's let his hair grow a little grayer than usual.
Mm-hmm.
But he still looks, you know, he still looks like Bruce Springsteen. Mm-hmm. Although he had a great line. He was telling a story about it when he was like 19 years old, and he was going to leave Asbury Park for the first time with his band to go to San Francisco to perform because he needed people to see him. And he said, so they found this manager, and he goes, I was 19, and that guy was 70. And then he stops, and he goes, that's not that old, because he's 70 now. And let's not forget, too, you know, he did at least address it, which I gave him credit for. You know, he had that DWI. You know,
in November,
and then it came out.
A little bit's happened over the last couple of years, but yes, now it's
so he did address that kind of laughingly, but at the same time, and so there were issues
because it wasn't his father had battled addiction,
and it was
something that we had thought turned. You know, he was not a drinker because of that.
Yeah, in fact, the way that he tells it, you know, between his father's depression, which he didn't understand, and few did in the '60s and '70s,
sure.
as well as his alcoholism. Springsteen claims that he didn't really have a drink until he was 23 or 24 years old, mm-hmm. just because of the damage that he saw that it did. And this is my point. The show this time, it had its poignant moments and its drama, especially when he was talking about his father the last time. But I think that at almost 72 years old, he's really feeling his mortality.
Mm-hmm.
He put an album out in October called Letter to You, which was based, the impetus for the album was that the last member of his high school, his first band when he was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
died. So now he is the last man standing of that. He's the last living member. All the other guys died. And so this death apparently had a real, an impact on him to say, well, I'm the last man standing. And that was kind of the impetus for the album. And so that album, there's another song in there called Ghosts. And so this show was much more introspective and much more emotional. And I counted, and I was close enough to see, he cried about 5 times.
Oh, my God.
And he wiped the tears away when he talked about his father. This is the 10th year now that his mother has been suffering from Alzheimer's.
Mm.
She can't talk. She can't walk. She can't feed herself. He said, but she still wants to dance. When I play her music, I could see her wanting to...
That's beautiful.
Reacting. And so, he talks about his father. He talks about how the fact that Clarence Clemons, of course, his famous saxophone player, mm-hmm. has now been dead for 10 years.
Mm.
And that he wishes. And so the show originally in 2018 ended, of course, with him playing Born to Run, right? You have to play.
Got to do that.
But this time, he has a new song on the album called I'll See You in My Dreams, talking about these people of his past that he can see at least in his mm-hmm. dreams. And so he ended the show with that. Much different kind of vibe and much kind of a message. It was more, as I said before, about feeling the his own mortality, the mortality of the people around him, hoping that there's something more.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was
very powerful, it sounds,
yeah,
and very personal.
Yes. And it was like people said, well, why'd you see it? You already saw it. I said, well, you know what? I didn't see this show.
No. That sounds like a very different show.
You couldn't have.
Hey, Jim, hang on for a second because I want to ask you about, you said you had sort of a strange impression of COVID protocols. There's a lot going on there, but
yes.
we'll get to that. And then plus also, I understand the Park District crews are awfully busy right now cleaning up at Soldier Field after Kanye burned his house down in the middle of the field.
Well, I was the guy that actually lit him on fire.
Oh, you were that guy.
If you look close, you'll see me. There's a guy in black.
You were dressed all in black.
Yeah, it was just a little match. It was just a little match. That was me.
Well, at least you weren't the guy that got set on fire, which I'm told might actually have been Kanye. Is that possible?
That's what some are
reporting. I'm going to look into that. And we're going to pause here for just a second. More with Jim, Elton Jim Toronto. We're going to talk about that coming up here on WGN. All right, Jim Toronto is here. And we're filling in for Dean, and we know you here at GN for years and years and years. But, I mean, people know you as a music, as just somebody who knows a lot about music. I want to get your reaction to Kanye. Apparently, he burned his house down in the middle of Soldier Field. That was part of his performance art. It's just interesting. His ex-wife, Kim Kardashian, that was her. People said, is that her behind the face?
Some asked if it was me, because I do wear white well. But no, I mean,
I knew it wasn't you. Yeah, right? I wasn't sure if it was her. It was. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, apparently she showed up in other cities too, because this was an interesting thing too. Don't forget, this was not a concert.
No.
This was a listening party in a stadium. Usually a listening party is in a small club, with a few people to hear the actual album, but obviously he doesn't do anything small.
No.
Now I don't know if it was an edict on the city's part or if it was just that that's how many tickets were sold, but only 38,000 people were there. You know, I mean, Soldier Field can hold close to more than 65,000.
Sure.
So I don't know if the city had put a limit on that, but still.
He started out big, and then he scaled it back,
yeah.
And then he said they were going to do the vaccination tent outside.
Right,
but
to
then
give people shots.
But that they said they did that in Atlanta, and four people total showed up to get them.
Well,
so it wasn't
Atlanta.
All that effective, but they're trying.
Yeah.
They're doing what they can.
But, the thing is, perhaps the fact that it's a listening party, not so much a concert, and as you said before, he is something of a performance artist.
Mm-hmm.
And
it really
so,
was
wow. The big thing, if you remember during the week, was he's rebuilding a replica of his childhood home.
Right.
You know, and that was the big. I don't think anybody knew he was going to start himself on fire.
No one thought this. There was a wedding with his ex-wife. There was a funeral. Everyone's dressed in black and a lot of dark stuff. And then there's the house on fire.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was either a magical, spectacular performance, if you're a big Kanye fan, or some people said it likened it to him going through therapy. It was like him going through his whole life.
Well, what kills me is that if that was her, and we think it was, right?
We do think so. Variety is saying that. A lot of the folks that cover entertainment.
It's quite... I mean, I'm surprised she would show up, because to me, isn't that a statement on their marriage, that he was on fire? I mean, I mean, don't try to figure.
You can read a lot into that.
Yeah, don't
but
try
I,
to
I think
figure
should...
out Kanye, or as we should say, Yay.
That's his new name.
Because he has changed his
name. That's his new name.
But yeah, that was quite a sight. And let's think about it too. Did you really want to start yourself on fire in Chicago? Which has a little history about a fire.
Yeah.
Do you really want to do that?
I think
that?
He's got a lot going on there. The symbolism of the whole thing. There,
yeah.
I mean, like you say, you can read a lot into that in terms of this album is devoted to his mom, his late mother, Donda, who died tragically. She had some kind of an elective surgery.
Yeah.
And passed away way before her time. And she was really a big influence for him, right? An inspiration and a professor and a Fulbright scholar. And this woman of force who inspired her son to do what he did. So, I mean, I think this is so, I talk about personal with Bruce Springsteen. This one seems very much so for him.
Well, he has, over the last several years, he has certainly become much more religious based. And he has talked more about, his rap has always been more personal and always talked about his life. But it does seem to have gotten even deeper in that. So that's a very good, comparison to having his therapy, because it seems like everything he does now, I don't think his therapist even has to sign any kind of non-disclosure, because he does it himself.
Yeah, 630, why don't you just be honest? It was the most idiotic thing ever done. The guy needs mental help.
I
think he's admitted that he is not all mentally there, that he needs some help in that area. And people love his music, and he's true to himself. And this is what he's doing, this performance art, as sort of a reflection of how he's feeling.
Yeah, plus, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, we're talking about it. That's entertainment. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, you might not like his music and might think he's crazy, but he's also an entertainer. And so to light himself or someone else on fire who's supposed to be him, that's that's not bad in terms of making a splash and making people talk about what you did the next night.
You just have to pay $42 for the what was it, popcorn or something, caramel corn? I don't know. I don't know what was so special about it, but that's what he charges. And people pay it, Jim. They pay it.
Hey, believe me, people will pay $42. You know, as long as his name is on it, they'll pay, you know, $1,000. Look how much they're getting for hoodies now.
I want to get to Charlie Watts in a second, and you were kind enough to join me just, you know, shortly after we found out about his passing. But did you want to mention anything? Did we get to Elton John enough? Because I know
No.
You're okay with not talking about him anymore. No. Okay. I just want to make sure because you celebrate. Isn't he just have a birthday or something?
No.
Okay. All right. No. Okay. We're up to speed on Elton.
Yeah.
let's move on to Charlie Watts because I think he, you know, it's you're starting to see, you've seen so many tributes come in about him and what he meant, not only to the band, but to the music world and one of the greatest drummers of his generation. I thought it was interesting. And we talked about this when you were on before, when the obituaries for him reminded us of his roots and his early days and his influences, all the musical influences, which I want to hear more about from you, but the Chicago blues that mm-hmm. he studied early on just after he had signed up to join this band. There's a great story about how he didn't want to join when Mick asked him initially, and then they brought it up to £5 a week, right. And he said, okay, I'm in. I need to get paid at least £5 a week, and then he's in. But wow, what an incredible person.
Well, you know, and what I heard a great story, too, is that he had seen the Rolling Stones perform, because he wasn't in the band, he was in another band, and he said to Mick or Keith, you guys aren't bad, but you need a drummer.
Like me.
Yeah, but he didn't come cheap, obviously.
No, I guess that was a lot.
No, I think in the days, as you say, which in the days since his passing, we are learning a little more about him and also learning a little more of his influence. As I said, you know, he was a jazz fanatic. Aside from the Stones, he would have some side bands with big band music and swing music mm-hmm. and jazz. And as I said the other day, you know, his kind of playing, you know, we now are accustomed to the big banging kind of rock drummers, you know, like Keith Moon was with The Who or John Bonham with Led Zeppelin. And that is not what the early rock drummers were like. If you look at DJ Fontana, who played for Elvis, or if you, as I said before, you look at Ringo Starr, they came from, you know, kind of a jazz swing kind of background, because that's the music that they grew up on. They were all born, don't forget, they were born in the 40s. So that's the big music. So you can hear that kind of play. Charlie Watts' drum kit, once again, you look at some of these drummers now in rock bands, they have 47, you know, they're surrounded.
You can't see the drummer at most concerts.
Yeah, Neil Peart of Rush, who just passed away, I mean, he was literally encircled by drums. Charlie Watts had a very small, simple drum kit, because it wasn't about the pounding, it wasn't about the thunderous sound, it was about keeping time, giving some punch, and giving the beat itself a little swing and a little jazz. And so if you listen close to Rolling Stone songs, that's there. There's not those big crashing moments in Rolling Stone songs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, you know, people say that he is the rock of the Stones, because he was the basis. He was the thing that kept the sound moving forward, Keith obviously playing guitar and Mick singing, but it was Charlie Watts that was keeping that sound moving forward.
I love all those pictures, Jim, of the recent pictures of Keith Richards and Mick Jagger and him, because they still have their rock star hair and their rock star skinny jeans
right.
and, you know, the chains and stuff. And then he's in his dignified tweed suits and stuff. Love that.
Yeah, with the gray hair. He looked very dignified. And as we said before, he seemed like just like a very, you know, astute English bloke. You know, far from a rocker, but it, you know, and you were seeing too that apparently he was just a really nice guy. And from what I heard, everybody says he was a great conversationalist.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was an interesting
kind of
thing.
Intellect in some ways. Really thought through what the band needed to do, and kind of that guy. All right. So when's the next concert? Before I let you go, where are you going
to
go?
Well, we'll see. Now, if they're going to be on, I'm supposed to go to the City Winery to see Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, which has been canceled for 2 times already.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one, fingers crossed, will be 198 in February at the United Center, Elton John. But I don't know if it's going to happen in February.
Yeah.
I mean, can 20,000 people go into an arena? I mean, don't forget the Springsteen thing. Okay, fine. Everybody had to get vaccinated. So in theory, everybody in that place was vaccinated.
Right.
But it was under 2,000. How are you going to... How are you going to keep tabs on 20,000 people in their seats, in a concourse,
yeah,
in the bars?
I hope we're there. I hope we're at that point where that will be okay.
I need to go to another Elton concert, but I don't know.
Something tells me you won't be asking for a refund, though, if they cancel it. I think you're going to
That money has been out of my pocket for 2 years.
That's right. A lot of people are in that boat. Yeah. Thank you, Jim, for stopping by.
Thank you.
Awesome to see you. It's top of the hour time. We got to get to the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.